You are listening to Know You're Crazy. My name is Susan Dene. We all have crazy. What separates us is how we choose to deal with it. I'm going to be delivering engaging and actionable tools to own your crazy, treat your crazy, and turn it into your own superpower. I hope that you walk away from this show feeling the power and strength within you. And never forget to enjoy your journey because you are worth it.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Know Your Crazy show. My name is Susan Dene, and we are talking about emotional recovery in the raw. And today's guest I'm excited for because I often hit on four areas of life, whether that's our professional life, our relationships, financial, or our health. Those four key areas of our life, we often are looking to upgrade or make changes in. My guest today, Linda Griffin, has done just that. I was really excited when she reached out to me on LinkedIn, telling me about her aspirations and things that she's done. And because it aligns with the show and it really speaks to, I'm going to say a woman in this case, but anybody, taking the leap of faith with entrepreneurship and making a change in their life, Linda did that. Linda Griffin is a published author, a keynote speaker, and a writing and self-publishing coach. She teaches coaches, consultants, and other professionals how to capture their wisdom in a book, making their wisdom more accessible to people who can benefit from it. In the process, her clients increase their authority and thought leadership position within their ideal market. Linda developed the Author Fast Track program based on her experiences in writing and publishing a book. She takes people from idea to book in hand in as few as 90 days. After Linda left a corporate career, she was looking for a new challenge. She settled on entrepreneurship. She explored several niches and offerings, but none of them met her need to be of service to others while supporting her desired work-life balance. These included career coaching, general small business marketing, and niche marketing to the bed and breakfast industry. After publishing her first book, Linda came across so many other people who wanted to publish and decided to focus solely on helping thought leaders get published. For fun, Linda loves to make greeting cards, read mystery novels, and solve puzzles of all kinds. She lives in the Virginia in the Washington, D.C. metro area with her dog, Bugsy. And you can learn more about Linda at expertauthor411.com. So Linda, welcome to the show. I'm excited to have you.
Thank you so much, Susan. It's my pleasure to be here.
Yeah, well, you know, just to get started, I love the story. I read your book. Mm-hmm. I just want to first compliment you on what I loved about it was the simplicity in which it is put together to follow. Yes. Anyone could read your book and put those action items into action and produce a published book. I loved that about it. It was just easy reading and I ate it up. So I don't want to give it all away though. So what I wanted to start out with was, how about you just start out by explaining your journey a little bit? I briefly talked about it, but tell us your story.
Sure. Well, I'm glad that you said my book was simple, because that I feel is one of my superpowers, is to take a complex subject and break it up into steps so that it's easily accessed by other people. But and that goes back to my math background, right? So I was a mathematics major in college, and I've always thought of myself as a bits and bytes person. And you read in my bio, I love to do puzzles and, tinker with things. I call myself the gadget queen because I have every kitchen gadget that was ever invented. So that's really my forte. And when I left college, I got a job in corporate because that was really my experience, right? Both of my parents worked for someone else. They were not entrepreneurs. And none of the people that were in my circle growing up had parents who were entrepreneurs. So that was not something that was in my goals or dreams. It was, my goal was to get a great job in a corporate environment, which I did. And I thought that that would be where I would land for the rest of my career. So I really had a great career in technology. I was in a computer science field at one of the Fortune 500 tech companies, and it was great. Along the way, I did get into management and executive positions, and I got my MBA while I was still working. So I did bring that marketing flavor in and combine that with my technical expertise. And so when I thought about leaving my corporate job and thinking, well, there's got to be more than this, right? And my goal was really, as you mentioned, and the theme of your show about work-life balance, I really was working very, very hard. I was on call. I had to work nights, weekends, holidays, even as a senior level manager because of the job that I had. And I just thought, you know, I really would like more flexibility around my life and my schedule, more control over my schedule. I can't tell you the number of family gatherings that I missed because I had to work or because I was on call. So when I started to look at what else did I want to do, I first looked at, well, what were the skills that I had being a minority, a female in a technology, which is very male dominated field. I thought, oh, I could help other women be successful in corporate careers because I figured out how to do that. So I started out doing career coaching and helping other females help get ahead, if you will, in their corporate careers. But that wasn't exactly what I wanted. You know, it was kind of like there was still something missing. And of course, when I started my own business, I realized that, okay, I had no credibility as an individual entrepreneur, right? When I put that business card from that Fortune 500 company on the table, I had immediate credibility. But when I put my business card on the table, they were like, well, who are you again? So I realized that I had to wear all of these different hats, that support system that I had of having an admin, having a tech person, you know, all that stuff. I had to wear all of those hats. And I started interacting with other small business owners, joined several networking groups, and decided that, well, I could really bring my big corporate experience and tailor it to the small business arena and help them, because many small business owners are really good at what they do, but they're not that great at processes and procedures and putting things in place that if they're not there, the business will still run. And that's one of the things that I'm really good at. So I thought, okay, let me do that. So I pivoted my business to focus on helping small businesses with their marketing programs. And that was great. I enjoyed it. It was great working with them. But the problem was that every time I got a new client, I had to learn a new language. So it was office products one week, it was accounting the next week, it was something else the following week. So I realized that I needed to specialize and pick a niche, if you will. And so I decided that I would pick travel and hospitality because one of my hobbies is traveling. I love to travel. I haven't done that much of it since the pandemic, but love to travel. And so I decided to pick travel and hospitality and a small subsection of travel and hospitality, which is the bed and breakfast industry. And the only problem was, is that I didn't have any clients in that industry and I wanted to get some credibility. And I was working with a business coach at the time and he said, well, you know, the best way to get credibility is to write a book, right? And I was like, oh, okay, that sounds like a great idea. And let me do that, even though I had no idea what I was committing myself to do. And as well as the time frame, because there was a big industry conference every year in January for the entire bed and breakfast industry.
I got to jump in real quick because sorry to interrupt, but I loved the story in the book. This story in the book was absolutely, I loved it because I thought I felt like the pressure that must have been there. Yes. But also the desire. I will shut up so you can tell this story because I just love it. And the other thing that I noticed about your story so far was the intuitive ability that you had to recognize that although I'm doing this corporate coaching or going in and helping with processes, and I've done a similar thing, and it is when you're working with small businesses, there is a lot to bite off on that, right? But I think it's great that you were able to stand back and say to yourself, I like to travel. like knowing that professionally. And I love making this point with people, because when people are talking about, well, what would I do? Like, what am I going to do? And when I will respond and say, well, what do you like? Sometimes people think that's way out of their league. Like, well, how could I do what I like? Because you opened up with your story, similar to you. I was raised in, I wasn't raised by entrepreneurs. That was not the mindset. Dad worked on the railroad. Mom worked part-time bartending and then Walmart. You know, I mean, that was their, that, I mean, it was very much traditional, right? So I wasn't around entrepreneurs either. And so I just, that ability that you have to just tap in and say, well, I like to travel. And so now that I've leaped a little bit, right. And now that I, and also that you're taking in the, this is the thing about entrepreneurs. I have a woman that I work with over the years, and she's an entrepreneur with a highly successful business. And I like to remind her of how much, courage that takes, how much, perseverance that can take to, because you are responsible for all those aspects of the business, the marketing, the accounting, the, you know, the service part of it.
Like that's
all, right. And there's so much. And so I just, that's one of the reasons why I really enjoy speaking with you today. So go ahead. I cut you off at the conference piece. So
no problem. And you know, but I, let me back up for a minute, Susan, because you hit on something that I think other people thinking about starting a business should know. And that is, I tried several different things before I landed on the thing that I'm doing now. And I just remember back during those days, my friends would, they would laugh at me and they go, okay, Linda, what business are you in this week, right? Because first you were doing executive coaching, then you were doing small business, now you're doing something else. And you know, I didn't let that discourage me. And I think that's one of the messages I'd like to leave with your listeners and viewers, is that don't be afraid to try something. And if it doesn't quite fit, move on to something else, because you're the only one that has to be satisfied. Your friends and your family don't have to be satisfied with what you're doing. And so don't be, don't feel like you have to stick with something, even though it isn't the right thing.
Yeah. And I think that that's a great point to make. And the reason for me that that was really important to take in was because being raised in a, in just having the mindset, I guess, is more than of just the 9 to 5, right? You know, you go to school, you get a degree, you go work for the company, you rise up in rank, and you know, that's the goal maybe for some people.
Right.
But recognizing that when you come out of that, and you first land to say, okay, I want to make money on my own. And I know I have some abilities because, you know, corporate wise, I've shown some stuff, but realizing that it's almost like a symptom of entrepreneurship to change it up many times, like until you land, till you land the right lemonade stand, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of, I don't know if you ever have this experience. I've had a personal experience where somebody would be like, well, what do you do? And I want to say like 20 things. I do this and I do this. And I think this is so, and you'll hear people train and coach, like, you got to have your pitch down or you got to have your thing down. But when you're struck with the entrepreneur bug, or you're creating, which is what we're talking about, right? And really living in that alignment and finding the work life balance, which, you know, I mean, money's part of our equation to live a satisfying life, but we got to balance that stuff out. So, but to, like, it's a symptom of the entrepreneur bug. Like, you will probably go around a few times before you get it. So what a great point to make.
Yeah, absolutely. So we left off my journey as I was making the decision to write this book. And it was in October, and the conference was in January of the following year. And I really had no clue what I was doing. So I did know that I couldn't get a traditional publishing contract. I knew that much, because I knew that I have to get an agent, I have to shop the book around. So there was no way that could be done in time. So I realized that I had to self-publish, but I really didn't know anything about self-publishing. And I really was not a writer per se. Now, I had written blog posts for my business, and you know, I did a lot of business writing and all of that, but the idea of writing a book was not something that I was used to. And I just jumped in with both feet. And I, you know, I read everything I could. I got on the internet, you know, I found people online that could help. And I just really, and you read in the book that I was in tears at some point, because when I finished the first draft and I read it, I thought, oh my goodness, this book is garbage. It doesn't say what I thought was in my head. It didn't transfer to the paper. And I had to almost like start over again and rewrite a whole section. And so it was really painful. And I like to say that the ink was wet on the pages, but I got that book at that conference in January and launched it. And it was very, very successful. So I did accomplish, as you said, once I figure out I have a goal, I'm going to make it happen no matter what.
Well, you know, and that is the power of deadlines. That's the power of pressure, you know, and it causes what I think, because I've had examples like that in my life where it causes you to really make it happen.
Yes.
And not get so stuck in the results.
Yes.
You know what I mean by that? Like you move forward more at a more rapid pace. And because you had the, it's kind of like when we doubt ourselves a little bit, but you came with all this magnificent experience. Mm-hmm. And so, although, you know, you look at the book for your first draft, it was like, oh my goodness. But ultimately all that business experience and the intelligence that you already have is all there. Like we just don't always see it, but we get all wigged out about the expect or the results of it.
Yes.
So when you've got pressure, like a conference, I just loved it. Yes. Like I could just imagine scrambling and in the book you detail kind of the timeline and what's magnificent about it is it totally shows you how to do it in 90 days.
Yes. Right. Yeah. It can definitely be done in 90 days. And in fact, I've written two books and they both were written in 90 days. But Now the thing is that you must be totally 100% committed, right? It must be your top priority. When I did that, I carved out the beginning of every day to work on my book before I answered any emails, checked social media, phone calls, none of that. The book came first. So it is absolutely possible to do it. Realistically, the clients that I work with now, they typically take about 6 months. Because most of them can't put the kind of focus that I did on that book, on those two books. But 6 months is still really quick.
I was just going to say.
Getting a book written. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to say that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's rapid. I've been writing one now for probably a year and a half or so. Mm-hmm. And there's been other circumstances in my life, but it really does. It's either going to be a priority.
Yeah.
And we're going to get into this a little bit in mm-hmm. further discussion as far as how you make that happen and scheduling mm-hmm. that priority. So before we move into another segment or another conversation, I do want to say, you hit on it a little bit, mm-hmm. but I love inspirational things. And I wanted to know if you could tell me about mom and dad, because you dedicated your book to them.
Yeah, absolutely. I did dedicate the book to them because, you know, as you were talking about your parents, my father was a mailman and my mother was a school teacher. And I got my love of reading from her. And even though my dad was a mailman, he actually did go to college and he majored in math. So I got the math skills from him. And so really the combination of those two, with my mom being a teacher and giving me that love of reading and that love of words for my entire life. And then the fact that there's four of us kids in the family. I'm the oldest. And they raised us and put us all through college on those salaries, which, you know, is like unheard of, right? So yes. They were such an inspiration to me to accomplish what they did, such that I say, you know, I have to be successful to be able to live up to the legacy that they gave me.
Yeah. I just find, you know, when we're doing something that means a lot to us, and when I say means a lot, it hits the heart, like there's an accomplishment we have, you know, and we think about who in our life really influenced us to where we want them to know about this book. Mm-hmm. And it just came to me. One of the reasons why that probably was a little bit heartfelt for me was, unfortunately, if you've read any of my story or listened to anything, but I lost my dad to COVID. Mm-hmm. And after he was in the COVID unit for a while and you couldn't see him. And so then he came out of the COVID or out of the unit and they had him on a ventilator and the mm-hmm. hospital was calling me and they were saying, my mom couldn't go. It was too overwhelming for her. And my sister was not in town. Mm-hmm. And so it was me. And they said, you know, be good to come, even though he's on the ventilator, sometimes they can hear us. And so I go into this hospital room and it's pretty overwhelming. Actually, in my book, I write about this moment that as I got my laptop with me, And I think to myself, what am I going to say to him? And at this point, things are feeling pretty dire. You know, I'm having the notion that he may not pull through.
Yeah.
And so I sat down next to him on the bed and I opened up my laptop and I read my chapter from my book. And you know, it was, and I just kept reading and I thought, I don't know if he's going to make it through to ever read my book, you know?
Yes, right.
And, but that book will be dedicated to him and mom, you know?
Yes,
and
so absolutely.
Probably that just came full circle with me, why I wanted to ask that question.
Like, yes, absolutely.
Because that resonates with me. And my mom and dad were pivotal in my upbringing too. And, no matter where we come from, you know, there's values established, there's perceptions made. And my mom and dad really showed about a good work ethic. And really persevering through life and continuing service to people. And so they really showed that example quite well. So that's awesome. I wanted to ask you that.
And unfortunately, they neither of my parents lived to see me become an author. So, it made it even more special to dedicate the book to them.
Yeah. And I totally understand that. Mm-hmm. I really do. Yeah. Well, good for you. That's awesome. So let's move into what are some top reasons someone should consider self-publishing versus the traditional publishing route? Mm-hmm. You had hit on a few things in your story about when you decided, well, there's no way I can do a publisher because of X, Y, and Z. Right. And so I thought it'd be a great thing for you to share about what are the pros and the cons? I mean, there's going to be pros and cons on both sides. But talking about the motive behind making a tool like you did with the book, you mentioned it, you know, more or less the credibility. Mm-hmm. If you can just share and elaborate a little bit on self-publishing versus traditional, what you found, advantages, all just the details of that.
Yeah. Well, publishing, like almost every other business, has gone through a lot of consolidations, right? And right now, there are really only five, what they call the big five publishing houses. And there are a lot of other smaller independent publishing houses that use a slightly different model. But typically, as an author, you would get a book agent to take you on. And they would, that book agent would shop your book around to the various publishers to get a publishing contract. Now, the problem is that, again, just like with every other industry, because of the consolidations and the lack of, you know, huge piles of money, they don't have that anymore. They really hesitate to take a chance on a brand new author. Mm-hmm. Now, I typically work with brand new authors. So a brand new author who does not have what they call a platform, which is you already have media appearances, you already have a huge social media following, you already have things that you're known for in your industry. They're very hesitant to take on a new author because they want to be sure that they'll get the return on investment if they invest in your book, right? So what happens if you are lucky enough to get a book contract is that you get an advance. And everybody loves to hear that because in the news, you always hear about, Tony Robbins got a $100,000 advance for his next book. Well, yeah, but you're not Tony Robbins. And so you might get a $10,000 advance, which seems like that's a great number too, right? The problem is that it truly is an advance against sales. So with a traditional publishing contract, you get what's called a royalty. The publishing house owns the rights to your book. So they own the publishing rights and they sell the book. They have great distribution. They can get you in all of the stores and all of that. And you, let's say your book is a $20 book. You get $2 from each one of those books. So you basically, the average is 10 cents on the dollar. So think about how many books you have to sell at $2 to make up 10,000. Right? Mm-hmm. You have to sell a lot of books, 5,000 books, right? So typically the average nonfiction book only sells about 300 copies across its lifespan. So unless you do some other thing, there are other things to do to make your sales go higher. But the issue then becomes that 10,000 is the only money that you ever see, because you never sell enough books to make anything more than that, right? And that's if you're lucky enough to get a book publishing contract. So the definite pros to having a traditional publishing contract is that they do all of the work, right? As far as putting everything together, doing the layout, you just have to write, you get, you know, your editors assigned and all of that. They will do distribution, but they won't do a lot of marketing anymore. That used to be they would market for you. But again, that's why they're looking for someone with an established platform, because they're expecting the author to do the marketing, the bulk of the marketing. So the reason that I like self-publishing is that even though you have to take on a lot of the work yourself, unless you're working with somebody like me who can take on portions of that for you, but you get to keep more of your royalties, right? As well as you get total control over the book. So you control the pricing, you control what the cover looks like, you control what the content is. And the big one, which we alluded to earlier, is you can do it on your own timeline. With a traditional publishing house, it takes on average 24 to 48 months to get your book through their engine, right? Because you have to fit into their process. Yeah. With a self-published thing, you can do it as quickly as you can write it, right?
Yeah.
The dangers to self-publishing is because all of these tools are available, it's very easy to put out a low quality product, right? And yeah. I've seen some of them on Amazon. I've purchased some of them, and you look at it and it looks like someone did it on a word processor machine in the basement, right?
And they might have.
And so that's the risk of self-publishing, is you don't have the support system that you have with traditional publishing. And unless you know what you're doing or work with someone who knows what they're doing, your product, your end product won't match your brand. That's what I like to say is, hey, I want my book to look like everything else that I do with my brand, which is with excellence.
Yeah. And so, so that was all some really great information. So one of the, things, because I've looked into both avenues, and so one of the things that came up for me that I found rather discouraging with a publisher was that whole part about losing the rights.
Yes, that's big.
Yeah, that's a big one, because if you wouldn't mind, I think we're warming up to go to a break. I'm not sure if we've got like 1 minute left or not. You can get started on this. We'll get our little warning here in a second, but you can get started on this answer. And then if we just, I'll jump in at some point and we'll...
Okay.
Oh, we got 1 minute. Look, yes, she says.
Okay.
All right. So where we will go when we come back from break, what we're going to pick up on is some feedback and some details. What does that mean when we no longer have rights to the content or to the book that we've written?
Right.
Like, what does that mean to us?
Right.
And then a question I had for you, if you self-publish, and then let's say it does get some attention from somebody somewhere. Here's a question that we'll come back to, but is a publisher then at that point still able to publish it again, or has
yes.
it, or, and they can. Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. So really, all right. So that answers that question. And then when we come back, I'm going to have you go into detail what that means when you lose your rights to it. And so we are going to have a break, folks. If you've been joining us for the first half hour of the show, it flew by, which I love. It's great conversation. My guest here is Linda Griffin, and she's a expert author coach. She can help you get from idea to print of a book within 90 days. Most of the folks she works with do it within 6 months. But that is why we are talking today. And she's a successful entrepreneur, which makes me excited to speak with her. And so we will have more on this when we come back. Be back shortly.
Are you ready to get big and live your life out loud? Tune in to Get Big Out Loud Radio, exploring life through the lens of curiosity and compassion, with me, Carrie Knudsen, joining Dr. Pat live every second Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I will offer ideas to transform what you are thinking into conscious action If you want to get big and live your life out loud, visit me at KnutsonSpeaks.com.
Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharged phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today. Or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Imagine what it would be like to turn your pain into purpose. Tune in to Transformation with Martinet every second and fourth Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Martinet and her guests are here shining their lights today through empowering stories of hardship and transformation. Begin to see your life in a new light. Visit MartinetEmmons.com and tune in every second and fourth Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific to Transformation with Martinet.
Hey everyone, this is Susan Dene, and you are joining the Know Your Crazy Talk Show. If you've been with us since the top of the hour, I have special guest Linda Griffin. She helps people write books from idea to print within 90 days, up to 6 months is how quickly this can be accomplished. We spent the first half hour talking a little bit about her story from corporate career to going into business for herself. We talked a little bit about the entrepreneur journey involved with that. Sometimes the keep going until you hit the right one. I said it might be a symptom of entrepreneurship, which was exciting conversation. We talked a little bit about family influence and kind of more in the inspirational category as far as how we make the big decisions to change up our life and who inspired us along the way. Both her and I shared that our family was dear to us, our mom and dads. And then as we're getting into the end of the first half hour, we started breaking into the facts of self-publishing versus hiring a publisher, and what the pros and cons of that are. And Linda had done a great job explaining some of those pros and cons. And one of them that I wanted her to get a little bit more detailed to explain to you all about when you hire a large publisher for your book and they give you the advance, but then one of the things is you turn your rights to the book over to the publisher. And so I just kind of wanted to have Linda really describe in detail, like, what does that mean? Because I know for me personally, when I was getting educated in this world, that one took my breath away a little bit because, you know, it felt like I was losing like a control if I did that. Right. And so Linda, if you wouldn't mind just picking up from there and kind of talking, what does that really mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So the rights to your book is really the content. They own the content. So even though the ideas are yours, the experiences, all the things that you include in your book are yours, when a publishing house takes you on, they own all of that. And so they own everything from the content of the book to what it looks like. They can cut out chapters. They can change the title. They can they create the cover however they want it to be. And then they have the distribution rights for it. So you can't necessarily sell the book on, let's just say you have a conference that you're going to be speaking at, and you would like to sell the books in the back of the room. You may or may not be able to do that because you would have to get permission from the publisher to be able to do that. Many times when I've been a speaker, I've wanted to sell my books at a discount, let's say a conference price. Yeah. You can't change the price because the publisher directs what the price should be. So everything about that book and its content which is the rights, if you will, the right to do whatever they want belongs to the publisher. And so what you're giving up is that control, as you said, and in return, what you're getting is this engine, as I mentioned, that the publishing house has to produce the document, to create the printed copies, all of those things. So, you know, another thing, like if you wanted to do, several of my clients have done workbook versions of their book. You know, they wrote, one of my clients wrote a book on blockchain technology, and she decided to take some of that content and repurpose it into a fill-in-the-blank workbook. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't just arbitrarily do that if the publisher owns the rights to that book, mm-hmm. right? So with self-publishing, you create, the number one, your work is copyrighted as soon as you write it. That's another question that I get asked is, do I need to register the copyright? You can register it, and you know, if you want that that comfort level, but you don't have to, because you're, because of the copyright laws in the United States, your piece of work is copyrighted to you as soon as you produce it. So so you have that capability as a self-publisher that you own the copyright. You also become the publisher of record. The way that I work with my clients, there's a thing called an ISBN, which is basically a serial number for a book, just like your laptop has a serial number or whatever. That number is attached to the publisher. So if you get published by Random House, Random House owns that ISBN. So anybody who wants to know anything about that book based on the ISBN, they'll go to Random House. If you self-publish, you own the ISBN. And so everything about that book belongs to you, and people come to you if they want to get copies or they want to quote it or any of those things that might happen.
Gotcha. And so kind of a generic question around the ISBN. So how does, so one of the things I've come across just with the business and different phrasing and stuff is you've got copyright, you've got trademarking. And, you know, they, as you were stating, you know, the advantage maybe of a publisher is they're going to pay for the printing and all of that. But also I have found that when you go that direction, sometimes, you know, hiring an editor is still out of your pocket, and editors can be kind of expensive, right? Depending on. And when you go for, so there, you know, there's like these expenses that even though somebody may be publishing your book, you're still going to be responsible for different chunks of expenses.
And, yeah, it depends. Yeah. It depends on what type of publisher. Maybe at the beginning of our conversation, we talked about what I call the big five. And then there are other hybrid, the big five, the New York, what's called the New York publishing houses, they will take on all of that. They will give you an editor. They will give you a layout person. They will give you a cover designer. Well, they won't give them to you. They'll have one on staff and they will work on your book, right? Some of the other publishers, the smaller publishing houses, are called hybrid publishers. And that's where, as you're correct, it comes in that they don't do everything. They may do portions of it, and portions of it you might be responsible for. So anytime you get, anytime you contract with a hybrid publisher, anybody that's not a New York publisher, you want to very carefully read the fine print in that contract to know exactly what they're providing and what you're expected to provide. And I have a great story about that with one of my clients. I had a client come to me. He was working with one of the smaller publishing houses, and he had missed the deadline of when he was supposed to get his first draft completed. And when I talked to him about that, it was, well, they expected him to do all of the structuring of the book. So what the chapter should look like and all of that. And he, being a first-time author, didn't have a clue what to do, how to do that. Now, with a New York publishing house, you'll work with a developmental editor who will do that stuff for you. But with this particular publishing house, they didn't do that. He was expected to produce that on his own. And he ended up working with me to provide that service for him, to get him to the point where he could get a first draft submitted to his publisher, which is what they were expecting.
Well, I'm glad you shared that story, because that also highlights another service that you offer, right? You know, even though he didn't go the complete self-publishing route, he did still utilize your services, because as I said, personally, I get it. When you get down to outlining those chapters or figuring out how to write them out, it can be very overwhelming.
Yes.
It don't matter how many books you pull down off that shelf and try to make a copy, it's still your words and you're still trying to decipher the organization of that. And so I can definitely appreciate what you do as a service and, you know, helping somebody manage through that and get through that and understand that process. And I also thank you for talking about the, you know, the five major publishers and then the, what would you say?
They're smaller publishers. Sometimes they're called hybrid publishers.
Hybrid. Yeah.
Because they do some of the same things that a traditional publishing house would do, but not everything. And, and you typically pay them a fee. Like with a New York publishing house, you don't pay them, right? They pay you the advance.
Gotcha.
With the smaller publishers and the hybrid publishers, you will pay them something because they're providing this service to you in addition to the other things that they may provide to you as part of their publishing service.
Gotcha. And so one of the advantages to self-publishing, and this is what I really liked about your story and the book that you wrote, is you were very specific about this is a book because you were getting into the hospitality and bed and breakfast area, right? And you needed a book to show your expertise. Mm-hmm. And books give authority. Books give credentials.
Right.
And the reason why, and so it is, and I don't know if this is, I hope this doesn't sound shallow, but it's a marketing tool.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right? I mean, that's what it is. And so, but it's a fantastic marketing tool.
Yes.
In that it's giving content that can be actionable items for anybody to use.
Yes.
And so you're getting
We talked about early on, I don't think we mentioned that I only work with nonfiction authors because fiction is a totally different business. It has different rules and all of that. So when I, everything that I've said, put nonfiction in front of it, right? And so when, and I'm very candid with my clients, is, you know, I use the Tony Robbins example. You're not going to make $1 million from book sales, right? As a nonfiction author, unless you're Tony Robbins. So what you need to do is look at the book, as you said, Susan, as a marketing tool, right? A book gives you instant authority. It puts you head and shoulders above other people who do the same thing that you do. And so one of the first things that I do with my clients, because it is an investment to work with me as well, is, okay, what do you want the book to do for you, right? Do you want to be a paid speaker? Do you want to run workshops? Do you want to have an online course that your book is based upon? Those are the things that you have to think about. Do you want to get higher quality clients? So you give them a book instead of a business card, right? And so that $20 book may lead you to, you know, a $1,000 consulting engagement because of the level of authority that it provides to you as the author.
So the book is opening up more projects for you.
That's right.
What it's doing.
That's right. And that's what my book did. That first book that I wrote, Max, for the bed and breakfast industry, and I launched it at that conference. And I gave away several of those books to the state bed and breakfast associations that led to speaking engagements. Some of them bought my book in bulk because it became part of the curriculum for their new innkeeper series. And so though there are ways that you can get more book sales as well as other consulting engagements using that book as leverage.
And I think it's great that when you work with your clients, you're bringing them down to what do you want?
Right.
And getting them to think in that output type of, you know, it's, you know, sometimes people just want to write to hear their voice, right?
Yes, right.
But ultimately, what are you trying to do professionally with your book? You know, because one thing is reaching people and sharing some knowledge and, you know, and another thing is strategically applying these tools that are within you to catapult your business, should I say, or really align you to it. And that's what's fantastic about being able to throw that stuff out in 3 to 6 months is that we're not talking that this has to be, you know, 5 years out for you to write a book. And so you're making it very realistic for folks. If this is an avenue that you're wanting to get into, I mean, so many people right now, especially after COVID, I think woke a lot of us up as far as just the shift in ideas, as far as what we can do professionally, Right. I mean, it really has uprooted some old beliefs, and that's some of the good stuff that came out of COVID. But a lot of people are in that category where they're wondering, well, how would I do that? Or what do I know? And so between what do you know and what do you like, you know, writing a book and putting that knowledge is highly beneficial. So here's a question for you. All right. So I think you mentioned it in your book. There's different resources that you can use to help people help you get this started. And so what I mean by that is, did you ever do any, I want to say like contract work? Like, I'm familiar with an online service called Fiverr. So if you really wanted to hire some outside to help people, can you talk a little bit about that? So people really know that it's not about just, they have to figure this all out on your own, that there's really inexpensive ways to do more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the first thing I want to backtrack a bit on is, what is a book? Because that traditionally we thought of a book as being a big 300 page something, right? That contained all the knowledge that we had about a particular subject. That is not where the book industry is today, because people's attention spans are not there now. They don't want to read a 300 page book. They want to read a 150, 200 page book that focuses on a particular area of concern that they have. And so that takes some of the pressure off it as well, because you're not trying to write everything you know about a subject. You're trying to hone in on one particular area of your expertise and write a book about that. And so I want to just make that point, because people get intimidated when they think that they've got to write, you know, so many words and they don't have any words in them, right?
And thank you. Thank you. Because I think one of the first questions that when you and I first went back in emails and when we started getting this idea of having you on the show, or you had the idea actually, but when we started going back and forth in emails, I think I talked about one of the points, which I probably forgot to put on the outline, was, you know, the perspective of a book in today's market. And because a lot of people are writing books, which you touched on earlier about a good written self-published book, right? And you've bought some that aren't, but really, but acknowledging that folks are really into the quick win. Knowledge, right?
That's right. Yeah. And people are still reading, but that's another question I get. Well, are people even still reading books anymore? And yes, they are. They're just reading them differently. They may read them on an e-reader as opposed to print, but they are still reading. I subscribe to the industry publication Publishers Weekly, which puts out all of the stats every week of all of the, you know, everything. And books are still very, very popular. So never fear. The other thing is that there is a, I guess you would call it a halo effect, that if you give your book to a potential client, they may not read it. But the idea that you gave them a book, that you authored the book, carries all of the, you know, the halo effect of whether they read it or not. So I don't, you know, I tell people, don't get discouraged and think that, oh, you know, is anybody going to read it? Because even if they don't, you're still going to get the benefit out of it. So, but you mentioned resources. So yes, there are definitely resources. There are freelancers that that can do all of the components, that can do editing, that can do book layout, that can do book cover. You mentioned Fiverr as one of them. There's another site called Upwork. There's another one that is actually focused on the book industry, which I'm now drawing a blank on it, but so there are definitely freelance services. You have to be careful though, because they are not all equal. And so you really need to know what questions to ask when you are dealing with these people, right? So I'll give you an example. One of my clients came to me, they already engaged a book cover designer. And he had designed a really nice looking cover, but he was not a book cover designer. He was a regular graphic artist. And so when I looked at the book, the author's name was too small. Because remember, when you're looking at it on Amazon, it's in a thumbnail size, and you need to be able to read the author's name and the title easily. There was some of the title was too close to the cover image. So he did a great job, just if you were looking at it, you know, a poster or something, but looking at it as a book where the title needs to be visible, the author's name needs to be visible, the cover image needs to be in a certain spot with enough white space around it. Those are the kinds of things that unless you work with someone who specializes in book covers, you as a first-time author are not going to know to ask those questions, right?
Yeah.
So that's the only caveat I would say. There are many talented resources out there, but you have to know the questions to ask when you're dealing with them.
Which is, you know, one of the advantages to hiring someone like you. You know, anytime we dive into a new arena of exploration, whether that's writing a book, you know, in my case, I do a lot of emotional elevation coaching, helping people, you know, identify within themselves, you know, maybe some blocks they've got or some ways to enhance their emotional wellness in those four areas, you know, but I've been doing that for a while. And so, you know, and you've been doing this for a while. And so there's always an advantage to, if this is a goal that I have, I don't always know the right questions to ask.
Right.
Right. And so, but somebody who has done, not only coaches it, but has been in the trenches themselves and done it. I think that that's what's key. And that's one of the things I love about your story is, and that's why I loved the story about the conference is you are a woman who said, hey, I want to make these changes. And so you understand the challenge. The reason you know how to ask those questions is probably because you might have dipped your foot in a little bit too soon on some stuff and learned a different way.
Yes.
Right. I mean, sometimes that's it. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like, you know, let my experience of what not to do and what to do benefit you so
that's
that you can. And so, so that actually you may, you know, you can cut corners a little bit here and I can show you.
That's right.
Like I always like to say, it doesn't have to be that hard.
Right. That's right. Absolutely. And then too, I learn with every client. I learn something new with every client. So you're right. I bring not only my own experience, but the experience that I have working with other people. And, you know, I've seen and heard a lot, maybe not everything, but I've seen and heard a lot. Yeah. So I can prevent them from running into a stumbling block. As an example, one of my clients wanted to put the lyrics to a song in her book. And I said, no, you can't do that because that lyrics belongs to somebody else. And she said, yeah, but it's only just the first stanza. No, you can't do that. Not without getting permission, right? And music is one of the most strict industries without getting permission from the artist or the artist's company. So it's those kinds of things that I can stop them before they put it into the book and then get sued by someone, right? Because they use their material.
Okay, so we're wrapping up the show here, but I just wanted to try to get to this as fast as I could. Okay, here's the question. If someone was to decide today they are going to write a book and self-publish, what is, like, I'll say the number one thing they should begin with, but there might be a few things that they should begin with. But if they were to make a decision today, hey, this is, what is like the number one thing you would say, this is the first thing you want to do? And then maybe a few more after that.
Sure. Well, the very first thing is take an inventory of what you're good at and what you enjoy, right? You're going to be spending time with this material. And so it needs to be something that either you're really good at or that you're really passionate about, that you're willing to do the research to learn about it, right? So that's the very first step. And then the second step I recommend is that you go out to Amazon. It's the biggest bookstore in the world. Go out to Amazon and search on your topic. So say you're going to write a book on, babies, you know, do a search on whatever the aspect of it is, like, you know, raising toddlers to potty trained toddlers. I'm just making this up, potty trained toddlers. Do a search on that on Amazon and see what other books come up. Because you don't want to write a book that no one has ever written. It's counterintuitive. You want to write a book where there's already information out there, but you can add to the conversation, right? You can put your spin on it. You may be even doing the same thing that they're doing about potty training, but it's in your language. Maybe it's a day by day or an hour by hour, as opposed to everybody else just, you know, spewed out the information in one fell
swoop. I love that. Yeah. I love that you just said that. You join the conversation. You don't try to reinvent the wheel. Yeah. That's good. That's good.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So those are the two things that I would say you should start with.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what has been for you one of the most pleasurable memories with you self-publishing or coaching, or like, do you got any like really good stories that we can fit in here in the last minute or so?
I'll talk about one. And it was a client of mine. She wrote a book called Overcoming. And she is a coach also, and she had done a series of interviews over a number of years of people who had overcome challenges in business, in marriage, in, you know, life, and in health. And so she wanted to pull all those together in a book. And when she and I worked together, I said to her, I said, you know, I think this book could be a bestseller. And she said, oh, no, that's not why I'm writing the book. I'm writing the book to get the information out there so that it can help people. And I said, but think about it this way. If your book becomes a bestseller, it will reach more people because mm-hmm. it will automatically get that, you know, free advertising, if you will. And she had a large network, which was one of the things that you really need to get the word out. And sure enough, we were able to get her book to be an Amazon bestseller when it launched. And she was just blown away. She said, I never in my wildest dreams would have thought that I could be a best-selling author. And, you know, I can't promise that to everyone, but certainly it was a great story and it was so rewarding because she really wanted to help people and she was able to help so many more people because of the success of her book.
Well, I'm telling you, anything's possible. Yeah. Anything's possible. So Linda, how can folks get a hold of you? If they want to reach out to you for a service, a coaching, how do they get a hold of you? What's the best
way? The best way is to go to my website, expertauthor411.com. And if you do /gift, G-I-F-T, that will give you a little workbook that gives you those first few steps that we talked about, get you started on that. And it'll put you on a mailing list. It also has my contact information, phone number, email, and all of that in there. So that's what I would recommend that people do.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And folks, I read the book. If this is a passion that you have or an area that you want to go down, then I would highly recommend reaching out to her and getting on that mailing list and because it was a great piece of work. And thank you so much for being on the show. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. If anyone's looking to get a hold of me, you can go to the website, SusanDenee.com. My email's on there. Feel free to reach out to me. And then right in closing, I just want to say prayers for the families in Texas. Linda and I spoke about that briefly with the tragedy that happened there today. Please wish healing and compassionate thoughts and prayers to those families who are going through a horrific day today. And may we all put out positive energy in the world.
Absolutely.
So that we live a little bit more peaceful these days. So thanks again, Linda. It was really nice having you. All right.
Thank you, Susan. It was my pleasure.
All right. Oh, absolutely.
You have been listening to Know You're Crazy.
Crazy. Crazy.
And my name is Susan Denee. We are identifying, understanding, and treating your crazy one episode at a time. Tune in to TransformationTalkRadio.com. To connect with me or Growth Spurt Your Life, please visit SusanDenee.com. That's SusanDenee, DENEE.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.